Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
Blonde pouting Chris Wasser, Dean McGuinness and Fionnuala Jones join us once again for Movies and the Booze. Good afternoon to you all. I don't know where that came from. Just decided to say that. Chris. Yeah. The Substance. I saw Donald Clark gave it 5 stars.
Donald was getting carried away with himself.
No, he wasn't. It's great.
We're going to clash
great.
Over this.
Great. Yeah. Yeah. I love it.
I didn't hate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, as we'll get into it.
That's one for the
put
poster.
That in the poster.
I did not hate it.
Yeah, yeah. Solid 3 stars. But it does have a terrific performance in it from Demi Moore.
Yeah.
Dennis Quaid's in there too. Margot Qualley.
God, it's very 90s flashback stuff. Dennis Quaid and Demi.
This is true. Yeah. Almost didn't have Dennis Quaid in it. This film was originally Ray Liotta's and then he sadly passed. And so they had to look for another guy to play this greasy, oily studio exec. But yeah, we're going to be looking at that and also a film called His 3 Daughters, which is sort of this theatrical, thoughtful study of siblings in shock. Three estranged sisters coming together to look after their father at his New York apartment where he's receiving hospice care.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, bag of fun today, Sean.
Bag of fun today. Yeah, knockabout fun for those. And we're drinking pink beer, Dean?
Pink beer.
Is that what it is?
Red beer, yes. Yeah. We have fruit beers. We'll be talking about balance in beer flavour. And the different approaches that they've had in the States and in Europe. And we have got fruit lambic. So it was kind of the original beer where they did something to try to balance out the flavours. The lambics are particularly sour beers.
Yes.
And there's a tradition in Belgium of bringing in fruit into lambics and the sweetness of the fruit balances out the sourness. The two that we've got are both from Timmermans. The first one is framboise hibiscus, so raspberry and hibiscus. And the second one is strawberry and thyme. So they're using herbs to balance out the flavours.
And are they particularly sour? Isn't there a sourness scale or something?
There is. If you've got an oud goose, they are the particularly sour lambic beers. These ones are balanced out by sweetness. So there's a tartness to them, but the sweetness balances out the sourness. So they come across as nicely balanced and easier to drink.
An oud goose.
Oud goose.
Yeah.
O-U-D-E-G-U. E-U-Z-E, oud goose.
Crikey. Yeah. Using all the letters there. Yeah. So Saturday Night Live is back. Is this like a huge thing? Who's going to be on Saturday Night Live still? People still get excited about this?
Yeah, I feel like because obviously I'm of a certain age. I didn't really grow up with it. It wasn't really accessible over here. But I feel like I've gotten really into it in the kind of social media age in terms of the clipping and stuff. And I think it's a very interesting vehicle for celebrities still when they're trying to kind of maybe promote things or do a bit of a PR kind of rehash. So I do find it interesting from that perspective. Is it always funny? Like, quite frankly, no. But I think
I never found it funny.
And I think even the most diehard SNL fans would kind of admit that as well. I think it just has kind of a certain charm of seeing people, especially seeing celebrities kind of in a different light. Like Ryan Gosling was really good on the last season because people would also argue he laughed through every single sketch. So like he's kind of not fully into it either, but it kind of added to the comedy. Anyway, I digress. It's back for its 50th season. It begins September 28th, and we've got some very good like host musical pairings. And we've Ariana Grande is hosting October 12th, so she's hosting. I think it's only her second time hosting, but then the musical guest is Stevie Nicks, so that'll be very good. And also Ariana can sing and can act, and I think that would be quite funny. Significantly then we have Chapel Roan is making her SNL debut. That's November 2nd alongside John Mulaney. That's quite a big get, I think. She's kind of on this absolute insane trajectory. Played the Olympia this Tuesday. People could not get tickets. I went. It was excellent. But I don't know what. Sorry, not
but you just had to put that in, didn't you?
I did. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I got tickets through my connection.
Extremely. Yeah. It was extremely good. But I would wonder what she's doing because she's kind of on this trajectory of, I hate being famous. I don't know what to do. But usually the musical guests are promoting a new album or promoting material, and she is still kind of dining out on an album that came out last year and also a single that came out, I think she released Good Luck Babe in April, so maybe we'll get new music, I'm not really sure. Coldplay are going to be on as well. It's their 8th time on. That's happening in October as well, so yeah, some good guests, some good music.
Okay,
one to watch out for.
And Demi, who we will be talking about, has been talking about, God, she used to be the highest paid female actor.
Yeah, she got $12.5 million for striptease, which I think people were so mad about this at the time, because it was a thing where she was obviously with Bruce Willis at the time and was seeing what he was earning, and basically went to them and was like, okay, give me this. He can get this, so give me this. And they were like, okay, whatever. But she's basically come out, obviously, because she's promoting the substance now, and basically is saying that the reason why people got so up in arms was because Striptease was a film about a stripper and people kind of saw it as a portrayal of women, when, like, in actuality for her, she thought it was really important because she was going in and kind of leveling the playing field for all female actors and kind of attempting to break the glass ceiling in some way. But because of the content of the film and because of the role it was, it just wasn't seen as quote unquote good enough. And I know Striptease isn't really a great movie anyway, regardless of who you're playing or whatever.
Yeah, it wasn't a great movie. Yeah.
Yeah, not great. But she said, the narrative quickly became, well, she's only getting paid that number because she's playing a stripper. It hit me really hard. But at the same time, I understood that anybody who steps out first is going to take the hit. That goes for anybody challenging the status quo. So
yeah. But it didn't really change anything.
It didn't really change anything, no.
Men are still paid more than women.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I don't really feel like you hear of those kind of numbers really anymore for people. Maybe like a Tom Cruise-esque now.
Yeah, that's true. But did they always say even how much they get
that's
paid?
That's the thing. I wonder how much of it is under the under
I think
the
Scarlett Johansson probably gets around that.
Oh, didn't she? She got something nuts for Black Widow, didn't she? Wasn't that it?
Yeah, she did. But part of her contract was, I think it was supposed to be a cinema release. There was a lawsuit there, remember, between herself and Disney.
Yeah.
But just on the Striptease thing, I think it's very easy now in retrospect to kind of take all these classic films and say, oh, they were misunderstood and, you know, they were actually trying to say this about that. It's like, no, that was maybe an attempt at some sort of silly satire, Striptease, that is. Mm. But it's a terrible film.
Oh, awful.
It's poorly made.
Had, like, a lot of flops.
Yeah.
We're going to be terrible.
Oh, I mean, it's not that big of a stretch to say that this, like, and we'll get around to it, The Substance is the best thing she's done, probably. It's probably her best performance.
Ever.
There's been so many bad Demi Moore performances. That
G.I. Jane, she talked about G.I. Jane, like people thought that as like a betrayal of men or something, then she like, that's why it's
I'll still always love her for St. Elmo's Fire, though.
Yeah.
I mean,
is there any actor who ever goes, God, I was pants in that film?
Or very few of them.
I did it for the money.
You get a few of them that say that Steve Martin came out and said he felt that about half of his films were good and he thought that that was a good overall result.
Rachel Zegler came out and said that she took the most recent Shazam film, that terrible superhero movie with Zachary Levi. She said she took that because she needed a job and she got lambasted for it, like to the point where people still consider her like very ungrateful. She kind of can't shake it off, like, which is, because you can't win. You can't win.
No, you can't win.
I did it for the money or I was bad in it. You know what I mean? Because then people will be like, well, you're undermining the movie and you got that role and you should be so grateful. But, you know, so you can't win.
Gary Oldman came out recently and said that he didn't think he was all that good in the Harry Potter films. Something about not having read all of the material, or that he should have asked for more of the material yet to be published so that you can better understand the character. But he actually received an awful lot of flack for that online because it was seen as some sort of criticism towards, you know, the Harry Potter. And it's like, listen, if you're going to be angry about Harry Potter, there's enough reasons to be angry about Harry Potter.
That's the Harry Potter fandom for you, though.
No, because I remember when Snakes on a Plane came out.
Yeah, great.
I think that may have been that may have been pre-internet, I think, really. Yeah. But like, I remember Samuel L. doing interviews and it was like, what's it about? It's Snakes on a Plane, man!
There it is.
And somebody asking him, why are you doing, why did you choose this script? And he says, you take it off there and you put it in there, meaning food.
Yeah.
You know, like, I did it for money. Why else do you think I did it?
There's nothing wrong with Snakes on a Plane.
No,
it knows exactly what it's doing.
Great. Yeah. That was a classic. Telling you. If only Demi had chosen more wisely. Right, so let's move on to our first beer of the day, Dean.
Okay, so we're starting with the framboise hibiscus. So the base beer for this is Alambic. It's the style of beer that is brewed with spontaneous fermentation. So there's a fairly set grain bill in it. They use malt, wheat and oats in fairly set percentages. Produce an unfermented beer and then they put it into what's called a cool ship, which is a very long, flat container. Open a window on one side of the brewery, open a window on the other. Let the air flow through and the natural organisms in the air settle on the liquid.
Leaves and potato bags.
And it spontaneously ferments over an extended period. Now, it's literally the definition of beer being brewed in an uncontrolled way. You know, it's relying on nature to do whatever nature wants to do.
And in a lot of instances, what happens is the batch of beer that they end up with can be incredibly sour or not as sour as they intended.
So they it'll be different every time, well, I suppose.
Yeah, it's almost guaranteed to be different every time. Yeah. And then a lot of the skill with lambic brewing is in blending the different batches of beer. So they take one kind of particularly sour batch, a less sour batch, put the two of them together and come up with something that's, you know, considered to be acceptable in terms of flavour. Now, there is one lambic brewer, Frank Boone, who reckons that every now and then he has a batch that is so sour that nobody on the planet could possibly drink it. So what he does is he labels it vintage lambic and sends it over to America, and he says it sells like hot cake. Now, a second way of doing it, rather than getting two different batches of lambics, is to get something that will balance out the sourness. So what they do with fruit lambics is get fruit juices or fruit flavourings and put it in with the beer. The sweetness of the fruit balances out the sour of the lambic, and you end up with a balanced beer that is very palatable. In the case of this one, we've got framboise, which is raspberry, blended with lambic. Now, raspberry is generally kind of a slightly acidic fruit in itself, so it fits very well with the idea of lambic, because the sourness of the lambic contributes and balances out the sweetness of the raspberry and kind of enhances the flavour of the raspberry as well. But with this, then, they've taken the balance a step further, and they've started introducing different herbs and spices into their fruit lambics. So for this one, we've got hibiscus. So normally when you're describing a fruit lambic, it's a raspberry fruit lambic, and you say it tastes of raspberries, and that is quite accurate. With this, this definitely tastes of raspberries, but the hibiscus brings in a few other different flavours into it. Hibiscus has a kind of a floral aroma, and then also a kind of a fruit of the forest, dark fruit type aroma. So it develops and increases the complexity of the fruit flavours in the beer. The floral combines with the fruit and gives it a kind of a Turkish delight character. And then there's an almond character as well that develops in it. It's got a very jammy, sweet flavour on the palate.
Yes, it does.
And there's acidity in the background, but it cleans off the palate incredibly well. So when you've got something that has sweetness,
it's not cloying at all. Yes,
you get a kind of nice, clean flavour out of it. But yeah, absolutely lovely. And works really well. I've said this in the past. A scoop of slightly melting ice cream into it, and you get a alcoholic raspberry milkshake.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because it tastes very sweet, and then it's ever so slightly warming a bit afterwards. What's the ABV on this? Is this one of your killer ones?
No, this one is quite respectable, 4%. So it's,
oh, is that all? Okay, well, that's good. Yeah.
There are some lambics out there that are down as low as 2.5%, somewhere around 3.5% in terms of fruit lambics. They tend not to go hugely high on the fruit lambics. And Oud Creek, sometimes you'll see around 5.5%. There are some fruit beers out there. Delirium Red is up around 8% ABV, which is...
that's their speciality, the old Delirium ones,
Yeah, this is quite a respectable level of health.
I know, that's absolutely lovely. It's kind of autumnal, I must say. Right, Chris, what movie would you like to do first?
Yeah, we'll start with His Three Daughters.
Okay, His Three Daughters coming up after this.
Rachel, can I say something? Can you wait a second?
Not interested.
I haven't said anything.
I'm not interested in whatever you want to say.
Well, I'm trying to say...
Okay, here's the thing, all right? We don't have to say anything to each other. There's nothing you said. There's nothing I want to hear. You just do what you have to do while you're here, and afterwards that'll be it. We won't have anything to do with each other. We can just stay out of each other's way until then.
That's not very practical, nor is that what I think is right.
Well, this isn't about you.
No, it's not. It's not about either of us. It's about our father.
Well, our father, that's funny.
Why?
You don't call him our father when you want something from me. Usually you say, my father.
Don't be ridiculous.
What's going on here?
Well, I'm trying to apologize to her, but as you can
see... Your apology for real!
Yeah, that sounds like sisters, all right. That's His Three Daughters. Is it in cinemas and Netflix simultaneously, Chris?
Yes, at the same time, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So is it more about the interactions between the siblings?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. It's a very talky theatrical piece. I mean, there's times where I thought, you know, this could have actually been better suited to the stage. It does feel like a claustrophobic chamber piece that you see kind of, because it's all set mostly in the one apartment, you can see it working very well, you know, at the gay theatre or something like that. But you've got three powerhouse actresses in Carrie Coon, Natasha Lyonne and Elizabeth Olsen, as you hear, playing sisters, and they've come together because their father, Vincent, played by J.O. Sanders, who we see very briefly, he is dying. He's had cancer for a few months. One of the daughters, Rachel, played by Natasha Lyonne, she lives with him and she's actually been caring for him. But now that he's receiving hospice care at the apartment, the other two sisters have, one of them has flown halfway across the country. The other one's checked out from Brooklyn, but somehow manages to have more luggage. That's Harry Coon. And they decide that they're going to stay there.
Yeah.
And they're three very different people. And there's a reason why they haven't spoken in ages. I mean, Katie, who Carrie Coon plays, she's quite difficult. And, you know, she just criticizes everyone else's behavior. She opens up the fridge. She sees that there's just apples. That's all there is in the fridge. And she goes mad at her sister. And she tells her sister, who lives in the apartment, to go smoke outside because she smokes inside all the time. And that leads to some very humorous moments where, you know, Rachel's thinking, the dad's already dying. Me smoking here is not going to do anything, you know? Yeah. And then you've got Elizabeth Olsen's character, Catherine, who basically, she's kind of away with the fairies a little bit, but you kind of learn as the film goes on that there's a reason why she's the quiet one, you know? Both of her sisters think that she's, you know, got this perfect life halfway across the country, but she doesn't, and she has her own problems, and she just needs a moment every now and then to sit with those. So you have, again, three very different personalities in this little grief bubble, all dealing with the father's death in very different ways, and eventually everything just explodes. And there's also this sort of friction between Katie and Rachel, because Katie thinks that Rachel's just there and has been living with the dad so that she can get the apartment afterwards, and she thinks that she's not pulling her weight, and she's kind of criticizing why Rachel's decision not to sit in the room and look after her father. So there's a lot going on there.
God, you could locate this in Ireland in a heartbeat. very minor adjustments.
Well, this is what I was going to say. This is actually the first film that I watched after my aunt's funeral last week, which I would not recommend doing. But I'm glad that I did watch it, because I was going to say that we can all relate to that grief bubble stuff.
Yeah.
And for the last couple of weeks of my aunt's life, she was receiving care in the hospice, and we were with her every single day. We had our own little bubble there. And our family communicate better and get on a lot better than the family that you see in this film. But if you spend enough time together around the dying relative, you start to see and you start to really understand that, like, nobody grieves the same way. And there kind of comes a moment too where you're looking around the room and going, well, how come they're doing that? And how come I'm dealing with it? With, you know, bad jokes and awkward humor. And then this person is crying, and then this person is kind of running around the room trying to do things. And when I watched this, I thought, okay, it's probably because it was so soon. I thought to myself, I've never seen a film that better captures those really peculiar, profound kind of interactions and those really kind of, you know, just devastatingly sad kind of exchanges between family members when someone is dying. You know, the fact that like everyone kind of struggles to understand someone else's grief. So I thought the film was very good at doing that. You know, I did kind of have some criticism. I did think it was a little bit too stagey in places. And also just kind of, you know, there's an awful lot of acting. The acting is so loud in this. But I thought it was really beautifully put together. I thought, you know, despite the fact that it's stagey, there are some very naturalistic dialogue there. It's beautifully shot. I mean, look, it also remembers the importance of a sense of humor. And I think casting Natasha Lyonne as one of the sisters, you know, that was intentional, because, you know, she gives as good as she gets in terms of the dramatic work. But I love the fact that, for instance, one of the sisters is preparing the obituary for the father, and she thinks that she's missing something. And Natasha Lyonne says, how about married a couple of crazy bitches, raised a couple of crazy bitches? And I can definitely relate to the awkward jokes when I'm, struggling with grief. So it's a difficult film to watch, and I found it extraordinarily difficult last week, but I'm glad I watched it.
Yeah. Now, the film's obviously, as you say, it's dealing with grief, but obviously there are fissures as well between the sisters.
Yeah.
Which are probably magnified because of the situation. So, at the end of the film, please don't tell me there's hooking and learning and everything's sewn up and they're all great pals.
No, there's no great resolve here. And I was actually fine with that. It does take a little bit of a superficial leap towards the end of the film where it kind of, I don't want to give it away, but, you know, let's just say that there's this sequence between the sisters and also memories of their father that kind of didn't sit well with me. I was like, oh, we've all been very realistic up until this point, and then it just does something a little bit too surreal. But it does end on a note where, there's explosions and then there's tears and then there's hugs, and without giving anything away, there's also that feeling that the next time these family members are in a room together, they're just going to go back to the way they've always been. And I liked that, because
that's realistic.
We all fight and we all hug and we all make up, and some of us don't make up for a long time. And then you get back into a room together and it's just the same thing all over again.
Yeah.
So I thought that was quite good. And it also, its depiction of hospice workers too is great, because the hospice workers who visit the apartment, they're so kind and they're so gentle and they're so articulate, but they keep doing this thing where they keep saying, you know, basically the family member is on their way out.
Yeah.
And you have the situation where the sisters, whenever the hospice workers leave, they're like, we know that.
Yes.
That's why we're here. And again, everyone can relate to that. So yeah, it is a difficult watch, but you will be glad that you switched it on. It's in cinemas and it's on Netflix.
Yeah, okay. Is there any great benefit of seeing it in a cinema? Not to do cinemas out of business, but you know, sometimes films are, oh, this is a cinema watch.
Oh, actually, I think actually it would be good to watch it in cinemas just because of that thing that, you know, it's so easy to pause Netflix and get up and, you know, get yourself a cup of tea, and it's so easy to kind of just pass over the fact that this is, despite the fact that it's shot in kind of a single setting, it is beautiful to look at times.
Yeah.
So for an uninterrupted, you know, immersive experience with this very powerful drama, I'd say maybe give it a chance in cinemas because it's only going to be there for a week.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds great. Oh, yeah. It's only for a week.
Just a week. Yeah.
Yeah. So that sounds smells of, you know, it's there for a week, so we can throw it in for a few awards kind
of
thing.
There's that too, yeah.
Yeah.
Although I think that went out the window actually with COVID.
Oh,
I'm not
did
sure.
It?
It might be back in, but it's also the fact that, you know, Netflix paid for it and they want you to watch it there. So
yeah. There you go. We were, coincidentally, we were talking about Colin Farrell during the break there among ourselves in a completely positive way.
So
The Penguin is like, and I actually saw the review saying that this is like the best of the spin-off Batman things.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I have watched all of it, but the first episode came out yesterday it's airing on Sky Atlantic. The first episode was last night, but it's going to be every Sunday from now on Sky Atlantic, or you can get it on Catch Up on Now. It's set a week after the events of Batman, and it follows the Penguin, Colin Farrell's character, in the insane kind of makeup and suit and stuff like that. As I said, it's set a week after the events of Matt Reeves' Batman, which came out a couple of years ago. I don't think you really need to have watched it to get it.
I'd hope so. Yeah.
There's a lot I couldn't remember and I was like, fine. It's a standalone story, like, so don't be worried about that. Colin Farrell's having so much fun. He is just having such a laugh because your man is just this kind of bumbling criminal idiot who kind of keeps getting away with stuff and nobody really knows how he keeps getting away with it. So like, it's just a fun role for him to be in. I will say Christine Milioti, I think is how you pronounce her second name. She's in How I Met Your Mother and she's in Black Mirror, which we'll be talking about later. She plays the hangman in it, which isn't a spoiler. That's known. She's incredible. She's actually a bit of a scene stealer from Colin. She is so, so good. And the wardrobe and hair and makeup, unbelievable.
His makeup is there's a telly in here and they're putting up promos for it every now and again, so that like doesn't look at all like him.
Yeah, no, it's, and I was saying to Dean again off air where he found the suit and all the makeup like so hot that it was like raising his body temperature, so that basically they had like an air conditioned tent kind of following him around so he was able to like cool off in between takes because he was just finding it so hot. And he's also kind of talked about look, I don't know if this warrants a second season. As much as I enjoyed it and I had fun, I'm kind of like, let that where it is now.
Yeah.
But he's talked about I'm not sure if I'd be bothered, or I don't know if I want them to do a second season because the makeup is just, it's so hard. Like, it's every day and it takes hours and then you have to shoot and then you have to take it all off. So
would it matter though? In the sense that it doesn't look like Colin Farrell. They could get anyone to play that role if they're able to. Or they could maybe just hire a fat guy and save themselves the bother.
Well, it's not even like a weight thing. It's the face as well and the face makeup. But I will say he embodies that character. I couldn't imagine it as anyone else now.
Yeah.
Especially following on from like Danny DeVito and stuff. It's not a way I'm used to seeing him do it. And he's actually much better at comedy than I think people give him credit for.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. We were drinking, the first beer we had with Dean was a lambic beer. Someone's texting in to say, I had a night on the lambic beer once. I had the worst dose of the scutters as a result. Apparently it was the yeast and other solids in the beer. That's an ironic term to use. That caused it. Never again. It also gives you terrifying, hyper-realistic dreams.
Okay.
The thing is, like, half the people listening are going, oh, give that a try. That sounds fantastic. Might be worth it for that kind of a night. And they've announced a cast for Black Mirror 7.
Yes, which is coming. It's in production now and it's due for release 2025. It's going to be 6 episodes. We have Awkwafina, Peter Capaldi, Issa Rae, Chris O'Dowd, our own Chris O'Dowd, Harriet Walter, who's the crazy mom in Succession, my fave, Kristen Milioti, as I already mentioned, who was in S.S. Callister, which is kind of one of the best, most recent episodes of Black Mirror, that she's going to be in the sequel episode to that. If you watched it, you'll know, but that's coming next year. Paul Giamatti is going to be in the new season. Emma Corrin, Rashida Jones, Tracy Ellis Ross, among others. So,
crikey, that's a good cast.
But we were talking about this off air. The last season wasn't great. So I'm kind of like, will we maybe stop Charlie Brooker? I don't know.
It must be a strain, given that it's they're all standalone stories to keep coming up. If you've at least got one narrative, it's you can compel it on.
But, yeah.
You're squeezing that fairly thin eventually, I would have thought.
And there were some good episodes in the last season, but I didn't finish the last season. So like that would kind of tell you everything.
Story.
So.
Yeah. Let's find out about our second beer, Dean, and toast that poor, unfortunate person. Yes.
Yeah, so we're on to the second beer, Timmermans Strawberry Thyme. So again, quite simple for the core flavour of the beer, it's strawberry. Strawberry is an interesting fruit because it kind of develops as it ripens. It starts out with a kind of a fibrous kind of quality.
Yeah.
And then as it ripens, it gets sweeter and richer and fuller flavoured. With this, it's a little bit more ripe strawberry. There's some hints of strawberry pips in it as well. But the thyme is nice. It's a nice complement to it. And it's also quite nice because there's a complexity in the flavour. There's an amount of vanilla flavour. So it's a slightly creamy texture along with the strawberry. And then when you put the thyme in with it, that kind of horrible thyme flavour kind of reminds you of having a mint leaf on ice cream or on a dessert, you know, that type of flavour. Now, I was talking earlier on about balance and how they use fruit to balance the sourness. There's been kind of different approaches to balance in beer, but pretty much everybody agrees that beer should be balanced insofar as if something is out of balance, all you get is the thing that's causing it to be out of balance as the flavour, and then you just get a sickening flavour of that excessive flavour in it. That being said, when you look at America and Europe, the Europeans seem to have been incredibly committed to balance historically in beer. The Americans seem to enjoy the idea of going away from the centre as much as the politicians at the moment seem to enjoy the idea of saying something just for attention. So you have Americans who have done things like produced beers with what they claim is 1,000 IBUs, which isn't technically possible, just to get the attention so that people will try the beer to find out that it's absolutely undrinkable. Or they make chili beers where they literally have a lager, get a chili and put it into the bottle. And
why would you do that?
Yes, yeah. I know. And why would you drink it if you were being trained in brewing in Chicago and they brought it out and everybody at your table said, under no circumstances should you drink that? And why would you say, but I'm here to learn, so therefore I have to drink it? And then why would you find that drinking an entire 750-milliliter bottle of raspberry lambic beer doesn't kill the flavour of the chili?
Yeah.
Allegedly, that could happen to somebody.
Yeah, or kill them.
So
yeah.
It was pure chili, you know, just nothing but chili in the flavour. Now, they seem to have pushed for attention in American craft brewing, and they just kind of started going off in all these different directions, producing stuff that was off the wall. BrewDog kind of did an amount of it as well. And started a kind of a world war on producing stronger and stronger beers. So they start out with one around 18%, up to 25%, up to 40%, and then eventually 65% ABV beer, which was served in a dead animal. They got
dead animal?
It was like an otter or something, and they put the bottle into it and poured it out of the animal, again, purely for attention.
This is the end of Western civilization. It's no wonder. Yeah.
Now, what is thankfully happening is the Americans are kind of coming back more to balance. So they're doing really, really good beers.
Just in a beer sense, though.
In a beer sense. Yeah, no, unfortunately, they're not quite there on the political side. In Europe, what's interesting is it's nudged the Europeans to kind of look for a little bit more attention. So you see this because Timmermans is the oldest lambic brewery in the world. And a lot of the time, older breweries are very, very traditional in what they're doing. But they've kind of taken a contemporary approach now to fruit lambics and brought in a thing. They've also got a cherry with black pepper, which has a nice kind of balance. A nice, subtle, complementary flavour of black pepper as opposed to kind of an intense flavour. And with this one, it really kind of does give you that sense of a dessert that has been rounded out with a little bit of herbal flavour in it.
Yeah, it is kind of like a beer you would actually have with dessert.
Yep, it would. Or if you had really rich dark chocolate, would be lovely with this as well, because it has that idea of, you know, that like, well, at Christmas time, a lot of people will have chocolates like a strawberry cream or an orange cream or something like that, where you've got fruit flavour balance.
balanced with chocolate. With this, like literally just nibbling on chocolate and having it, its beautiful complement.
Yeah.
Part.
Okay. But there's no possibility that European brewers are now going to start doing this, you know, here's a beer in a dead cat or.
I think, well, that was a Scottish brewer that did the BrewDog is in Scotland. I suppose what you've got is you can't generalize hugely. There is a thing in America, I think, that because so many people are looking for attention, there's a need to be more extreme to get attention.
Yes,
so you tend to get a tendency of people pushing the extremes further and further and further.
But they would be publicity stunts, would they? In that they're not seriously expecting to sell that beer, but maybe some other beer that's a kind of normal beer.
Yeah, the Cave Chili beer was out. It came out in the late 90s because that was when I trained as a brewer in the States. And it is still around. It's not a beer that I know has an extended range of other beers with it. You know, if you were kind of saying, oh, we've got Brand X and we're going to do Brand X Chili just to get attention for Brand X, you could understand that. But they don't have a second brand. So some person felt that it was a great idea. Now, at the same time, I described them as tequila beers insofar as you regularly get a group of guys on a stag party. And like they all go into a pub and they say, right, we're all doing tequila. And like out of the 20, 19 of them say, I hate tequila.
Yes.
They say, it doesn't matter, you're doing tequila anyway. And they all drink tequila. So maybe it's kind of something like that, that people are kind of challenged into drinking it just to prove that they're...
That earlier text I read out about the Lambic beer. That may well have been one of those situations,
I think. That would be a bad experience the following morning.
One would imagine, yes. Right, we'll move on to our second movie of the day. It is The Substance. Here's a clip.
Have you ever dreamt of a better version of yourself? Younger, more beautiful, more perfect. One single injection unlocks your DNA and will release another version of yourself. This is The Substance.
I'm Sue.
You're hired.
Okay. That sounds more like the trailer than a clip. A lot of bass in that was my observation.
Yeah.
Do you have like Demi and then the kind of young better Demi? Are there two actors playing the same role?
It's such a weird statement, isn't it? The young better Demi.
Yeah.
Because Demi is brilliant here. Yeah. She is playing this one time Oscar winner turned TV aerobic star named Elizabeth Sparkle. Brilliant name. And she is about to turn 50 and she's essentially being put out to pasture. You know, no sooner has her birthday rolled around when you've got like this really oily studio exec played wonderfully by Dennis Quaid. He's enjoying himself here. He really is. He's roaring. We first meet him in a toilet and we're basically watching him relieve himself and he's on the phone and he's shouting about the fact that, you know, Elizabeth Sparkle's too old and I need someone more perfect, more beautiful, younger, and she needs to go. So Elizabeth is out. She's sacked. And on her way home, she is enraged and devastated and she sees herself being a billboard of her show being torn down and she crashes her car. Somehow she comes out of this accident without a mark on her, but at the hospital she meets this young, impossibly handsome nurse who hands her a USB stick, gives her a little bit of a physical and he says, you're perfect. This thing will change your life. The thing, when Elizabeth goes home and puts in the USB stick and watches this really, you know, eerie, surreal infomercial for this anti-aging process. This thing is basically going to help bring out the younger, better version of her. Now we'll skip the all the stuff that involves dark alleys and ominous phone calls and mysterious packages and we'll get to the point, which is that there comes a point in this film where Elizabeth Sparkle gives birth through her back to Margot Qualley's Sue. And this is the younger version of her. I mentioned at the top that this is a body horror. This is where the body horror element comes into it.
Right, okay.
And there are all sorts of rules involved, but the most important is that each person, the younger person, they're one and the same. They are one being. But only the younger version one version can basically be alive, you know, open, alive and kicking for 7 days while the other one sleeps. And then they have to swap. They have to make sure that they're feeding one another, but you basically hide one of them in the bathroom while the other goes off and lives their life.
Yeah.
If anyone listening is confused, don't worry. It's a lot actually simpler than it sounds.
Okay.
But, and you probably don't need to be told that the younger version enjoys herself immensely and she gets Elizabeth's job. And obviously there comes a point where she does not want to give, you know, Elizabeth the chance.
Back her stuff. Yeah. So, but while the young one is getting the job,
yeah.
Demi's just like lying in a bath someplace, oblivious to all this.
Yeah, sleeping in the bathroom. This is very kind of heavy-handed scene where Sue kind of renovates her apartment, or renovates Elizabeth's apartment, and essentially builds a closet to hide the older version in. And you can kind of see what they're doing there. And Coralie Farragut, who's the filmmaker who made this wonderful revenge thriller in 2017, actually called Revenge, she is having a great time with the messages in this film, which is basically about, like, the scariest thing about this film is the idea that someone as beautiful and beloved and just as brilliant as Demi Moore's character Elizabeth Sparkle can be told that no, you're too old and you're useless. And the reason why that's scary is because it's absolutely true. And there's parallels between Demi Moore's character and Demi Moore herself and the career path she's had and Elizabeth Sparkle. You know, this idea that once Demi Moore turned 40, everyone was like, well, you know, you're no longer getting interesting roles. Moore didn't actually stop getting interesting roles because of, you know, that double bill of G.I. Jane striptease, which was forcing him. She stopped getting them because she was aging. And that is just, it's terrifying. So the film is having an awful lot of fun with that. And in its first hour, I was well on board for the first hour. It's just, it's a tremendous looking film. It made me uncomfortable, but, you know, that's what it's doing intentionally. Margot Qualley is brilliant because she has to basically play the younger version of Demi Moore, and that's not easy. Demi Moore is fantastic. Probably her best performance. It lost me in its third act because that is when it really gets, it just embraces the whole Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde versus, the picture of Dorian Gray. It just goes full on into the body horror side of things.
Yeah.
It's actually quite, and I think actually the filmmakers, you probably agree, like they'd be delighted to hear that it is probably too grotesque, too disgusting, because they want you.
It's beyond. If you're squeamish, I would proceed with caution.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's seriously gross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But okay. I was saying to, because we both saw it, and I was saying to Fionnuala before this, that there's so many films that I come on here and talk about that made me feel nothing.
Yeah.
Whereas this, despite the fact that I did have problems with it going on forever, I did have problems with the fact that it does take the Moore's more approach. It does get a little bit excessive. It gets so outlandishly silly that it actually starts to annoy you. It still stayed with me, you know. It stuck with me for the rest of the day. I was supposed to have lunch afterwards. I didn't. There's parts that I couldn't get out of my head. Sound design, you were talking earlier about watching the films either on the small screen or the big screen. Do not watch this on a laptop or a small screen. It's only
cinemas. Need to see this with people.
See it in the cinema.
Yeah,
you know, it's a visual, visually it is magnificent, and the sound design is just, whether it's Dennis Quaid, you know, using the loo or eating shrimp, or whether it's, you know, Demi Moore's character, you know, this when she wakes up basically after Sue has gone over the 7 days, and the devastation and the anger when she sees what she's become, because I won't spoil it, but something happens if basically, you know, if you go over that 7 days. To hear that in a cinema and to see it, that it freaked the hell out of me. So despite the fact that I had problems, I'm really glad I saw it on the big screen.
Just to clarify, like, but if Elizabeth Sparkle takes this substance or whatever it is, but she's going to be asleep and not experience any of the benefits the younger version of herself get, what's in it for her?
The thing is that they are like one in the same, because it's your own, the way the substance works is it's like your DNA like replicating essentially, but it's just, it's, she's getting to relive it kind of.
But she's
again
aware of what the younger one is experiencing.
They
is
don't
she?
Really. They do and they don't share a consciousness.
Yeah.
It's like one of them almost has this, it's like when Elizabeth is Sue, you can tell that there's a little bit of Elizabeth and Sue.
Yeah.
There's no Sue and Elizabeth.
Yeah.
It's a bit strange. One of my colleagues actually made a reference to Gremlins and the rules about feeding the Gremlins. And the bottom line there is, don't ask questions.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. And for the 7 days that Elizabeth is, like, what, she's just wandering around LA and people go, you lost your job?
Kind of essentially. Well, no, she becomes a bit reclusive, and that's why she starts to get frustrated with Sue and the substance and is like, oh, well, actually, maybe this isn't what I want. But because she started to take it then, and they're becoming, they are one and they are always one, they're more entwined. She struggles to let her go then, even though she's waking up and is like really dissatisfied with the fact that Sue has gone, taken her job, taken her life, essentially redecorated the apartment. She can't break herself away from her. I loved it.
That's what I was going to ask, because Chris said, I mentioned 5 stars in the Irish Times, you're giving it 3.
I'd give it 4.5.
Yeah, okay, well, what's wrong with Chris that he's missing?
It is too long.
People have asked that before.
Definitely too long, and it was kind of, I was kind of losing it a little bit in the middle, but I think the last act is just so outlandish and insane that I was kind of like, I was, and then I just was like, I'm all in. It was mad.
Yeah.
And the performances are just so good. Like, Demi is, like, I'd love if she got some kind of awards recognition. I feel like Oscars are weird about horrors.
Yeah.
So, like, probably won't happen, but I could see it and I would be very happy if she did.
Could you eat lunch afterwards?
There's one scene that I won't say that has stayed with me that just, even to think about it now, it's setting me on edge.
Yeah.
And I'm not that, I wouldn't be that squeamish, but
okay.
I was.
So that, well, that's a tip for people. Don't plan dinner for after,
no,
after
absolutely
this movie.
Don't. Yeah. No. Don't.
No.
Stop in for a bag of chips.
If you
anything.
Drink a load of those beers that Dean has and you watch this film, you're going to have a real
That's the weekend.
Yeah, you'll have your man's experience again. Chris Wasser, Dean McGuinness, Fionnuala Jones, thank you all very much.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief
with Marks and Spencer
on News Talk.